How many games will Florida State win in 2025? Spring camp is almost here, Michael, so we got some thoughts on that. What we're going to be watching for, some position battles, some guys to emerge on the depth chart here, and then baseball remains undefeated with a weekend series against Georgetown coming up, so we're going to tack that on there at the end. Thank you for joining us, Noel Nation. Michael is back with us. He is still alive. I didn't bury him in the basement or anything. He's still here, so glad to have him back. Glad to have you guys tuning in with us for another episode. So we got some football talk today, got some baseball talk today. Excited to get in this one. And Michael, excited to have you back, my friend.
Yeah, thanks for having me back. Yeah, sorry, guys. I've been out sick, but Jesse's been holding down the fork, the founder and administrator of Plant the Spear. So you've done a good job, Jesse. I've been watching all the episodes. It's been great. The content's been really good, but it's good to be back. I apologize if I have to mute myself occasionally because I still have this cough. But yeah, man, some of the stuff that's come out so far, so excited about the baseball team. I know we're going to talk about them in a little bit. But yeah, this FanDuel, it's an interesting conversation we got going here.
Yeah, and so that's where we're going to start today. And if sometimes I get a little bit long-winded, it's to avoid Michael having a coughing fit. We kind of negotiated this before the show because he can do a short burst here. But let's start with what he hinted at here. FanDuel, one of the largest sports books in the country, recently put out a over-under win total for Florida State. Now, you guys, if you listened to the last episode or one of the last episodes that I did with the ACC odds, we talked about the ACC odds for and things like that, national championship. But they had not put out the win total for Florida State yet. Well, they dropped that, of course, right after I finished recording that episode. So I thought this would be a good thing to come back to and revisit today because it is an interesting number. And I think it's a pretty good call if we're being honest here. So they set Florida State's win total at 7.5 for 2025. Now, obviously, you know, they can't win 7.5 games. So that means you either got to take them to win 7 or 8 by this number. And obviously, we're not saying to go put some money on one way or the other. But I think this just goes to show you where Vegas thinks Florida State is at for this upcoming season. Because again, like I talked about on the past episode, they get it wrong from time to time. It happens. I think that we were probably the favorites to win the ACC last year and we finished dead last. So they can very well get this wrong. But more often than not, they tend to get things right. And so we're going to look at that 7.5 number starting right now. Now, for me, Michael, I can see a scenario, and I put this out on social media just to kind of gauge where people were at. And I think a lot of people are feeling the over on this, as I would probably assume both of us are feeling the over on this too. Now, there's some people that are very optimistic about next season, talking about over 10 wins and whatnot. Now, I'm not there yet. Yeah. We'll have to wait and see what this looks like. But I think I would take the over here by just a hair. I think Florida State is going to land in that 8 to 9-ish wins range for next year. But I can also understand a scenario where you would see that 7-5 record being a possibility, which to me would be a disappointing season.
Yeah.
Because I think to really break it down, right? How do you get to 8 wins if you are going to take the over here? We've discussed this before on the schedule breakdown episode and in other episodes before. You have the 4 really tough games that you're probably going to be the underdog in. That's Alabama, Clemson, Miami, and Florida. Then you have the other 8 games on the schedule that you are probably going to be favored in almost every one. Games you feel like you should win here. And so that's how you get to your 12 games. Well, to get to 8 wins, that means you need to win all 7 of those, quote unquote, we'll call them winnable games that you'll likely be favored in. You have zero margin for error to get there. And you have to pull an upset in one of those 4 games. Now, I don't think that's a lot to ask for. Now, going on the road to Clemson, beating Alabama, going into the Swamp and beating Florida and beating Miami, those are all going to be tough asks to do. But I don't think it's impossible to do at least 1 or 2 of those. Now, if you don't have a 100% hit rate in those 8 games and you lose one, well, now you got to start pulling a couple of upsets, right? And so I think it is realistic to say, all right, well, maybe you drop that NC State game on the road on a Friday night, which, you know, all of us FSU fans have, you know, just I don't know about you, Michael, but I have that like PTSD flashback of the fat dude holding the pole, like swinging
absolutely.
Right. Of Carter Finley. That's what just like, I'm like, you know, I can replay it in my mind. And so like, if you don't win all the winnable games, you got to pull some upsets. So I'm going to take the over here But I think it's going to be slim, and I could see where you could see 7-5. But what I'm hoping for is a minimum of 8 wins and a surprise in a good way this time, because boy howdy, we got a surprise last season. Oof. It was just in a really bad way. And for the pie in the sky people that see 10 wins, hey, look, I'll give you credit. No one saw 10 losses last year. So, you know, maybe no one sees 10 wins next year, but it's certainly possible. We just have to wait and see what this team looks like.
Yeah. You know, what's the old saying? A broken clock is right at least twice a day.
Exactly. But,
so at some point, these 10 win pronosticators, you know, will be right at some point. Hopefully, it'd be nice if they were right next year. I'd love for them to be right next year.
Right.
But right now, all we have to go off of is what this team brought in the offseason through the transfer portal, through the high school recruiting, what this team brought in as a coaching staff, Gus Malzahn, Tony White, some of the new coordinators and assistants. And we're working off some of the returning players. And so let's just think about this, Jesse. The returning players and part of the coaching staff that had come back from last year, that was a 2-10 win season. That's a 2-10 team.
Yeah.
Now you add on the new components of the new players you brought in, high school portal, coaching staffs that you brought in. Does that equate to now basically a +5 on the win scale? Does that help them? You know, you and I, we talk about war. It's a baseball term, but we're using it in football. Wins above replacement. Do the replacements that they've brought in add to get them to 7 wins? I would say, yes, I'm with you. I am slightly just over the tick of the 7.5, meaning I think they can get to 8 wins. And not just that I think they can get to 8 wins, Jesse. You've heard me say this. They need to get to 8 wins.
Yeah.
Mike Norvell needs 8 wins in this upcoming season to help them get to that. And again, you look at the schedule, like you said, the 4 that are probably going to be your hardest games where you're definitely going to be underdogs, Bama, Miami, Clemson, and Florida. And then you have the toss-up of UCF. So if you take those 4, you're already at 8. You put NC State as a toss-up as well because, you know, Carla Friendly on a Friday, Lord Jesus, you're at 7. And then don't forget, you also have to go to Virginia like you're a high school football team playing on a Friday, right? So you don't get that one. Now you're at 6. So you would imagine that there are at least one upset and getting one of those weird, wacky Virginia or NC State games that get you to 8. You have to get to 8.
Yeah. And again, that's where we come back to, like, you have zero margin for error if you don't pull any of those upsets. You have to win all those other games to get to that 8 number. Now, again, I do think you will pull an upset this year. And you know, I think it's a good conversation that you brought up is, like, first off, I do want to say that we always try to be one of the most positive outlets out there when we talk about Florida State, because we love this team. We want to see them do good. It's good for us when they do good, obviously, as fans and an outlet. But, you know, there is, I think, a different approach that we take this year with being a little more cautious and a little more guarded after what we saw last year. And I think part of that is for the people who get to 10 wins, like, you're bringing in I know it's based on the system that you're running, but you brought in Thomas Castellanos, who has had maybe a couple of good games throughout his entire college career. You know, you're talking about, you're bringing in a head coach from a program that went 4-8 last year. You're bringing in a defensive coordinator from a program that I think won 6 games last year, 5 or 6 games last year. So now, with that being said, Nebraska's offense was hot garbage and their defense was good. And UCF's defense was hot garbage and their offense was pretty good. So you're hoping that collectively you've plucked the good apples from both of those bunches you're going to combine them in Tallahassee and it's going to work for you. So that's where I don't know that I'm to 10 wins yet until I see this product on the field. Now, if they come out and they beat Alabama in game 1 and they absolutely hammer the two crappy teams, the East Texas A&M and the Kent State, you know, all right, maybe we're on the road to 10 wins. Maybe so. But I think I need to see it first. I need to see how the sum of the collected parts looks together and is this going to work? But I do think I take the over here. Just like you said, with a slight lean to the over at around 8 wins. And I'm hoping, we don't know how the other teams are going to look either.
That's
so
right.
We're hoping that maybe they surprise us in a good way.
No, absolutely. It'd be lovely if they surprise us in a great way. I'd love for Florida State to come out. And I don't care. I mean, we've said this before. I don't care if you win last second by 1 point against Alabama. Just find a way to win.
Yeah.
If you can win that first game, Well, then, we start dreaming, right?
Yeah.
I'm not saying we're dreaming of a national championship, but we start dreaming of at least like a, you know.
I'm Googling where the playoff games are.
Exactly. And I'm looking up tickets already, right?
Yeah.
And so that's what, when you look at this win-loss total, the over-under, you know, I'm imagining that Vegas is figuring somewhere in there that they're going to pull an upset somewhere. These win totals usually bake in that the team is going to be able to win a big time game somewhere. And for me, I'd love for that big time game to be the first game, because if you can win that first game, the momentum gives you as a program, as a team, the restoration of confidence in that, oh, this is Florida State football again, man, it'll do wonders for the program. It'll do wonders for, I mean, yes, let's be honest, our product that we put out here for Plant the Spear, it'll do wonders for that if we can get that first game. And I do think that when you look at the team, based on what we know, based on everything they've brought back, this should be at least, at the very minimum, a 7-win team. Now,
right,
as they work through the spring, as they work through the preseason and fall camps, we might be able to hopefully see that Alabama game. We might be able to say, oh, maybe they're more than a 7-win team. But right now, they should at least be a 7-win team.
Yeah, no, I agree, because I do like Tony White as a coordinator. I do think Gus Malzahn as just a coordinator and not a head coach will be successful. And I do think Thomas Castellanos is a dynamic player. And we're going to talk about that when we talk about things for the spring here coming up in just a minute. But one thing that I did want to mention, too, that I mentioned in the last episode that I thought was interesting is when we talk about the schedule this year, remember, these are the ACC championship odds put out by FanDuel as well. And you know, this is according to this year, not last year. But again, when you look at last year, we talked about this, or I talked about this on one of the last episodes that I did, where Florida State's schedule was a sneaky hard last year, man. I mean, even your off opponent was Memphis, and they were, what, a 9 or 10 win team last year. So they were still really, really good. And so you look at just the odds to win the conference. Last year, you did play Clemson. You did play Miami. You did play Georgia Tech. You did play UNC and Duke, who were all 6 of the top 8 teams in the odds to win the ACC this year. Now, I know that's not last year, but you played, I think I had in my notes, 5 of the top 7 ACC teams last year. But this year, you get number 12 NC State. Of course, you got to play 1 and 2. You got Clemson. You got Miami. You get Miami home. You got to go on the road to Clemson. Most of you know I feel like that Clemson game on the road is probably your hardest one on the schedule. But you also get number 12 NC State, number 13 Pitt, number 14 UVA, number 16 Wake Forest, and number 17 Stanford. So realistically, your schedule sets you up to be a team that can win 7 to 8 games this year, if not more. You know, you get the ones that you should win, and then you surprise in 1 or 2, you know, you end up beating Bama and Miami. Man, we're off to the races. And so, you know, we'll have to see. But I think more than anything, you have to avoid the letdown, right?
Yeah.
You have to avoid going on the road and losing on a Friday night to a UVA program that you should not lose to.
That's
so
right.
You avoid those. Then you get an upset or two, and you're at the number that you want to be. And so with that said, we will go ahead, and then we'll transition into some spring thoughts.
Well, I was just going to say, you're absolutely right. Like, yeah, I absolutely agree. And here's the thing. You have to win the games that you are expected to win, bare minimum. So you need to go on the road and beat Virginia. You need to beat Pitt. You need to go on the road to beat Stanford. You need to beat Wake Forest. You need to beat Virginia Tech. And you should win at Carly Finley Stadium. You should win. You have better talent, better coaching. Now, we all know that Carter Finley Stadium has voodoo against Florida State.
Yeah.
But you should win. If you win those winnable games, plus obviously Kent State and Texas A&M, Commerce, whatever they are, we assume those are wins. You're staring at 7 or 8 wins automatically.
Right.
And then, man, if you could pop 1 or 2 of those ones that you're going to be heavily underdogs in, you're at 10 wins. You're in the you're probably looking at the ACC championship game, at least staring at it. So that's all I want to say. There are at least 7 to 8 like you should win games already on the schedule.
Yeah, no, I agree. And just to touch on one more thing, there is, you know, when I talked about in the last episode, and the thing is, like, yes, you don't want to lose to Alabama.
Right.
No, and of course you don't want to lose to Florida ever because that's not how we are. But again, you look back to Clemson season last year, they got absolutely boat raced by Georgia and then lost to South Carolina to end the season. But because those weren't ACC games, they still found themselves in the ACC championship. They still found themselves in the playoffs because they won that.
That's
so
right.
To me, when you look at the schedule next year, I don't even think you need to beat Clemson and Miami. I think you need to beat Clemson or Miami.
That's right.
If you beat either one of those, then the SEC games, they matter, but they don't matter, right?
They do
matter from a perception standpoint and an at-large standpoint, but they don't also matter from a playoff standpoint and an ACC championship standpoint. But like you said, man, if you avoid the letdowns, and for what it's worth, look, we shouldn't have lost a lot of those games last year, but in 22 and 23, Mike Norvell was very good about not losing games that he shouldn't have lost, about avoiding the letdown.
That's
so if you can get back to that, like you said, man, while I can see the path to 7-5, because that 2-10, you know, is kind of dragging me by the back of my
shirt.
It's still there. It's still there in the back of my mind. I can also see how they can get to 9 or 10 wins.
Right.
I can see that very easily by just winning the games you're supposed to win and pulling an upset or two. So as Florida State progresses, we know right now they're finishing up tour of duty and they're getting their bodies ready to go into spring camp, which is where we're going to get a first kind of idea of how this new look Florida State is going to take place. But before we jump into that, let me bring you a quick word from today's sponsor, and that is our friends over at Alumni Hall FSU. These guys got elite gear. This is where I got my hat. That's where I got my shirt that I'm wearing on the show. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure you check them out. If you're in Tallahassee, 1415 Timber Lane Road, or online at Alumni Hall FSU, navigate over to the FSU page. Make sure you save 10% with code SPEAR. So thank you for supporting those that support us. Now, Michael, let's talk about spring, because this is going to be a massive spring for this program. And I mean, they really got to pick themselves up off the mat this year. Now, the dates have been released. As you guys know, there is no spring game, which, the way things have been going, we've talked about this before with Nebraska canceling theirs and the other teams that have followed, Texas and USC, I think it is, probably not going to see a whole lot of spring games in the future anymore. I think they're going to go the way of the dodo there. But we do have, which stinks for us as an outlet, because we won't get to see them until they kick off against Alabama. But we do have dates that have been released. Spring camp does open on March 19th, so we're a little over 2 weeks away, just under 3 weeks there, and it will run through April the 21st. So it is on our doorstep here. So let's start, Michael, with some big picture things that we're looking for in spring camp, and then we'll talk about some offense, defense, position groups, and things like that. But I think as a program, there's really three main things that I'm looking for in spring. And obviously, you know, spring is where you really start to just kind of see who the guys are that are going to emerge, see how the pieces you got are going to work out. Do we need to go after somebody in that spring portal session? You know, is this what we thought it was going to be? Is this looking like what we thought it's going to look like? So that's where I come with kind of the big picture outlooks for me. And the first thing that I'm looking at is physicality.
Yeah.
This has nothing to do with the pieces that they brought in, but we've heard about it. We heard Gus Malzahn talk about it. We heard Tony White talk about it.
Yeah.
In their opening press conferences, where you have to be more physical, and that starts in practice. We've both lamented Florida State in the past for their practices and how they really aren't very physical. And that is something that is hard to turn on Saturdays when you don't practice it. That's one of the reasons why I think they've had such really kind of a hard time tackling the last couple of years.
I agree.
They don't tackle in practice. And so, you know, I mean, injuries are always a concern, but injuries be damned. You got to learn to be physical in practice. That's where it starts at. So the first thing I'm looking for is how different the practices will look with the new staff. That's the number one thing that I'm looking for.
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, we've talked about this before. Football is a physical contact sport. And I understand that in this day and age, you know, you're trying to limit injuries. You're trying to make the game more safe. That's all well and dandy. Let's do that. But in order to play the game of football, you have to be physical. I sound like Booger McFarlane. In order for them to win the game, they got to score touchdowns, right? But it's just true. It's just the nature of the game. You've got to be physical. And I know I was at the Orlando Seminole Boosters event that they put on a couple weeks ago, and Tony White and Gus Malzahn and Mike Norvell there, and Tony White and Gus Malzahn, like you said, they both. I mean, if there was one point that was hammered over and over again, was that the physicality of this team has to intensify, it has to grow exponentially. Now, what does that look like in the terms of practice and how they go about practicing? Well, I would imagine that you're probably going to see a lot more live periods. If you've played football, you know live periods means they got full shells on, full pads on, and they're actually going live. Like it's a real game day scenario. And so I think you might see a little bit more live periods. I think you might see even a little bit more physicality in the drills that they do. As they ramp up towards the passings, I think those are going to be and this is speculation. This is not because they've said this. This is just based on the comments they've made at the booster event. You're going to see a lot more of that because they want to have a physical team. You look at Gus Malzahn offenses, they are typically very physical because they want to run the ball. They don't, and it's not just it's not just east-west running. Malzahn loves that get down south, get straight into the line type of running, downhill running. And so you're going to see a lot of – I would imagine you would see a lot of physicality that begins to show up in these practices.
Yeah, and that's really what I hope for because, I mean, how much good did it do you to protect players when you won two games? It didn't do you any good, and you didn't look physical. You know, and then you look back to some of the previous years. I know maybe they didn't practice that way back then either, but you also had guys who were just really competitive, like a Jared Verse and a Trey Benson and all that, who would hit you in practice and let you know about it. And I think that's how you create the edge that they have repeatedly talked about that they lost last year. And so I think that starts in practice. I want my guys to, you know, once you get off the practice field, it's fine. We're friends. But on the practice field, man, you got to be ready to throw hands.
I'm trying to murder you.
Exactly. And that's what you want. And it all starts in practice. And so that's how you get that edge. Because, again, you know, not to use the mantra of an opponent, but, you know, you hear like Alabama in their heyday under Nick Saban, they said, well, look, man, it's practice is so hard because we're so physical and we have so much talent in practice. When we get to game day, it's easy.
That's right.
And I feel like last year was kind of the opposite of that for Florida State. So I think that's where you have to flip that narrative and start with physical, hard-fought practices. So now the next big picture thing that I'm looking for coming out of camp is leadership to step up. We know this was one of the biggest problems that this team had last year. The coaches were forcing leadership. They were asking guys who weren't natural born leaders to step up. And I understand if you're not a natural born leader and it comes, you know, doesn't come natural for you, it's hard to force that. But you brought in some guys, and Thomas Castellanos at the most important position, second most important position, because I consider the offensive line the most important position now after last year. But I think when you see him come in talking about how he wants to lead, he even said this locker room lacked leadership. So you have guys who, you know, you need these guys to step up and be in that role. That's where I'm looking for a James Williams that come in from Nebraska. That's where I'm looking for Thomas Castellanos. A Daryl Jackson, a guy that came back when he didn't have to, you know, pulled his name out of the draft talk. These are the guys that I'm looking for to step up and be vocal leaders and to kick you in the butt. Like we talked about just recently here with Jared Verse and Trey Benson and Jordan Travis and all these types of guys where if you slacked off, they were not just going to be like, okay, well, whatever. You know what I mean? They might fight you. And so that's what I need. I want to see leadership stepping up because that was such a big problem with last year's squad that needs to be figured out this year. And I think you got the guys to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you talk about leadership being MIA last year. I mean, it was not even just MIA. It was dead and buried. There was not real leadership on this team. Just listening to some of the people out there who had more insight into the team than we did, man, you'd hear stories about how DJ, you know, would show up and, you know, to the media, it was like, oh yeah, DJ is a great leader. But really, and behind the scenes, DJ would come and do his work. And I'd heard stories of how he was just on a different wavelength, a different thinking. You know, he brought his family to Tallahassee to be with him. So as soon as practice was over, you know, he's not going and hanging out with the guys in the locker. He's not going to grab food or anything. No, he's going home to his family. And not that that's a bad thing. That's a great, you know, you and I, we're both married. We got family. We understand that. But when you're playing in this team sport, there's got to be camaraderie. There's got to be a willingness to get into the mess with each other. Somebody's got to step up and call out the part of my language, the BS, when you're not playing correctly, when you're not doing the right things. And that just wasn't happening on last year's team. And Mike Norvell even said it himself at the booster event, at many other events. He said that he was trying to force the leadership. He said the body language, including with himself, was terrible a lot of the time. And he even acknowledged that, yeah, maybe a lot of that was the lingering from the snub and just some of the stuff they went through afterwards with the players and everything. But this year's team has already, at least what we've heard from the coaching staff, that Thomas Castellanos has been a bullhorn of vocalness. Yeah. He has been talking, and not just talking, but distributing and showing his actions. I mean, they're talking about already how they're staying after the tour duties and they're throwing 300-500 passes to the wide receivers because they're trying to get on the same page. They're trying to work with the offense. They're trying to get this camaraderie together. So you're already starting to see more leadership again. Now, whether that translates to W's on the field, that's yet to be seen. But already just hearing about that gets me excited and goes to your big vision point. Like, we need more leadership.
Oh, I 1,000% agree. And he's already talked about how they hang out off the field and things like that. Because, I mean, like you said, will it lead to wins and losses? That's to be determined. But one thing you did have in 2023 was leadership. One thing you didn't have in 2024 was leadership. And that's you see how those two seasons went. So it's a big part of how this thing goes. And, you know, when your back's against the wall or when adversity strikes, those leaders are going to be the one that picks you up. And that's something that they just didn't have last year.
Right.
And then my last one that I have, and I'll throw it to you for any of your big picture thoughts here. But my last big picture thought is just really in general how the new systems are coming along. Obviously, you're installing new offensive and defensive systems this year. Of course, Gus Malzahn's offense might be somewhat similar to Mike Norvell's in concept, but it's a completely different offense in the way they go about things and what they hope to accomplish with it. Obviously, this defensive scheme is going to be totally different coming from a 3-3-5, which is your base defense. They're going to be more multiple, which we'll talk about that later when we talk about some defensive stuff here. But I don't expect them to look pristine mid-season form. I don't expect that, but I don't want it by the end of spring to be sloppy, right? Like, I don't expect you to have the full playbook put in, but I want guys to be lined up in the right spot. I want guys to have a good understanding of the concepts as you go into summer and then you enter into fall camp. You know, just how are they coming along in these new systems? That's really something that I think is important because, you know, you start with Alabama. You don't have time to clean up mistakes. You've got to be ready to go game one.
That's right. Well, and, you know, one of the things I think that got Adam Fuller in trouble towards the end of his time here was more so when he first got to Florida State, he really had talked about how, you know, they were trying to run this really complicated man-to-man scheme in the beginning. And as you start to see Florida State get better, you know, they went from, you know, 3-6 to 5-7 to 10-3 to obviously 13-1. What was happening was they were simplifying the defense so that they could release those players to just play on instinct. Yes, they had principles and things they needed to understand, but they were able to play on instinct. Well, it seemed like Fuller just lost his mind and then went super complicated the next year. And then tried to work its way backwards.
Yeah.
You know, remember Georgia Tech sliced us up running man routes, crossing routes, and we couldn't cover those things.
Yeah.
I would imagine that Tony White, he talks about this at the booster thing, is that what they're trying to do is put those players in position to play on instinct more so than play a scheme or have to do all these different checks. There are going to be those things, but really, can we get the best players in the best position to play instinctively to move around? He, like you said, he talked about being multiple. He talked about, you know, it's not just going to be a three-man front. You're going to see some four-man fronts. You might see some bare fronts. Bare front is basically like five hands in the dirt there. You're going to see multiple opportunities for that. And then, of course, Gus Malzahn, like you said, a lot of the same schemes that Mike Norvell ran, you're going to see similar to what Gus Malzahn runs, but the terminology is going to be different. So how they're clicking on that terminology, how they're settling in on who are going to be their top backs, you know, who's going to be those wide receivers that you're putting out there, how does Castellanos get used in this offense, all those things you want to, like you said, not be in midseason form, but you want to see a gelling, a basic concept where these players can just play and their skill sets can take over.
Oh, 1,000%. And, you know, back to what you were saying about the defense, how many times throughout the season did we hear, well, they just simplified it. They just simplified
exactly.
it.
Exactly. Like, oh.
Man, how many times do we have to water down the scheme to finally right. make it work? And so right. I love the thought process of like, I'm going to let athletes be athletes.
Right.
And yes, we have to work together as a cohesive unit, but I can't make guys freeze in the moment because they're trying to think about more about what I should be doing than reacting and doing what they know to do as college level athletes. So I don't know if you have any other major kind of outlook things that you're looking for that you can go ahead and roll into, and then we'll talk about some offense and defense.
I only have one, Jesse. I only have one. And I was watching Azaria Thomas's NFL draft interview.
Yeah.
And one of the things I was impressed about from this guy is he talked about that dog mentality, how tough it was, that practices were tough and hard, and how Mike Norvell expected this out of you and the best out of you. And he wasn't missing words and he wasn't letting off the gas. And I think that Mike Norvell mentality went away a little bit last year.
Yeah.
That is what I am looking for. Number one, numero uno, right there. I need Mike Norvell to be that big dog. Just that I'm just going to rip your throat out because I know you can play better. There right. was a video that recently came out with St. John's basketball coach, Rick Pitino.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you've seen this. It
I
was
did.
Incredible.
I saw, yeah.
He was talking to his players and he was talking about adversity. And he was like, you know, you guys, you face adversity and then you just kind of wilt. You know, where were you raised at? You know, he goes, adversity is life. Deal with it. I mean, there were some explicitives
yeah.
in there.
Yeah.
But man, after I saw that, I was ready to put on some,
right.
some something and go fight. I want that Mike Norvell back.
Yeah.
Who like he'd look you in the eye and pierce through your soul and tell you why you were going to play the best you can. And we did not see that last year. So I think all your keys of physicality, leadership, and the systems gelling, I think are important. But I think right at the top of that is I need the dog of Mike Norvell back. That's my number yeah. one key. I want to see him as he comes out in these interviews, just a nastiness about him. He's not happy with whatever's happening. I don't care if Thomas Castellanos completes 20 straight passes, 8 touchdowns, the defense gets 40 interceptions. I want him to come to that interview and said, we played like crap today, and I'm yeah. running them till they puke till their eyes fall out.
Yeah, but take a page. There's not many pages you want to take out of Brian Kelly's book, but take
That's
a page
right.
out of Brian Kelly's book and be like, you know, our players just suck. That's just all it is. I don't
That's
know what
right.
to say.
That's
and so,
right.
like, yeah, no, I agree, man. I think this season is as much of an important turnaround for Mike Norvell as it is for the Florida State football
That's
program.
Right.
You know, I think not from a, like, is he going to get fired standpoint.
Right, right.
I think it's more from like, man, he's got to find his confidence again. He's got to find his edge again, and he's got to learn how to put that last season behind him and
right.
rebound this year as well. So I think that's a really great point because honestly, it all starts with him.
That's right.
And if
that's
your head right. coach isn't confident in what he's doing, the rest of the team, we talked about this before in another episode with the body language and all that
that's
stuff
right.
that trickles down.
That's right.
And so I think it's, and plus I think you're going to have more intense assistant coaches and coordinators too. So I think that
that's
will
right.
help as well. So now let's talk about some of the things we're going to be watching on offense and defense here. And like we said, Michael, hey, look, I don't care what everybody, what the saying is about quarterback is the most important position on the field. Actually, it's not. It's offensive
it's not.
Line because
that's
we
right.
saw last year, you know, DJ can hit the bricks 100 times, but if the offensive line sucks, you can't do anything else. So to me, offensive line is the most important position on the field because without them, nothing else works. It
That's
doesn't
right.
matter if you have Jameis, Jordan, or Joe Montaigne back there with a little Waterboy reference there. But without the offensive line, it just doesn't work. So let's
That's
start
right.
up front with the hog mollies there, as they call them. Look, I just want to see, do they look competent, man? That's really what I want to see. And now we know the hype that came out last year. Now, there was a couple of reports where people said, look, we're either going to have a dominant defensive line or we're going to be able to run the ball really well. One of the two, because one of these didn't really look right in practice. And so I just want to see, I think they will be better this year. I really do. I put a lot of that blame on Alex Atkins.
That's right.
I just do, man, because yes, he got some pretty good work out of them in 2022, but you know, we just saw a lack of development. We
That's
saw,
right.
you know, all this, so many switching of players and no just consistency. It was just a disaster all the time. But we did see some of those guys produce before. So
right.
to me, last year I put that a lot on coaching. But you got a lot of new faces this year. And so I just want to see, do they look competent? I'm not worried about how gelled they are as a unit yet. That's going to come through the summer and into the fall and all that stuff. But do you have guys that are out here, you know, just pardon my French, just whipping ass, man. Like, that's what I want to see. Are you putting dudes in the dirt? That's what I want to see. And then some of the other questions I have is Richie Leonard ready to return? Because he was hurt early in the season last year. A lot of us are counting on him being your starting guard. So that's he back and ready to go? Who is going to step up to be the sixth, seventh, and eighth guys? Like, we know that I think Herb Hand is going to do less of the rotation factor, but you got to stay healthy throughout the course of a season. So you need that six, seven, and eight. You saw good things from Andre Otto last year as a young cat. You saw Jalen Early have a lot of promise at the tackle position. TJ Ferguson is still on the roster. I learned that today when I had to go refresh on this roster. And, you know, what is Lucas Simmons doing? You know, this is a guy that I was extremely excited about. We already know Armella didn't pan out, transferred out, but Lucas Simmons is still a guy that I have high hope for. Now, I don't know that any of those guys I just named are going to start, but do they look competent? Was it an Alex Atkins problem? Is Herb Hand going to get the most out of those guys, or is it a guy problem? So that's some of the things that I'm looking for. But, man, more than anything, just get me a competent five. That's what I'm looking for more than anything. Because if it doesn't look good, I don't really care what the rest of it looks like, because we're going to be in the same boat we were last year.
Absolutely. I don't care if Tom Brady's back there. If you don't have a competent five, it's not going to work. I mean, we saw this with the – I mean, let's just go to the NFL just real quick. Look at the Super Bowl. Look what the Philadelphia Eagles were able to do to the – what is – arguably the greatest quarterback in the NFL right now, to Patrick Mahomes. He had less than a second to stand back there to work his magic. He was, I mean, freaking Josh Sweat, man, what a name from the past. Go, baby, Florida State Noel. I mean, he was dominating that game. He should have, honestly, he should have won the MVP if it was my vote. But, I mean, they could not pass block to save their life. And you saw that last year with DJ again. I mean, case in point, DJ didn't have DJ loved to throw the passes to Florida State fans. He loved connecting to Florida State fans, but he didn't have time to even do that because he was running for his life. What the slow running he was doing, he was running for his life. Can we get five competent offensive linemen who are going to put their nose in the defense and say, you're not touching this quarterback, you're not getting to this running back? By the time you touch this running back, we're 3 yards already down the field. Like, that's what we need. And that is actually, honestly, more so than any other level of this team. Maybe second, like 1A is the offensive line, 1B is the defensive line. Those two, and I know we're going to get to that, but that offensive line, that is going to make or break this season.
Oh, 1,000%. And, you know, again, it goes back to where the episode I did in the middle of last year with the trouble in the trenches. The offensive line has been a problem at Florida State for a long time. And I am excited about Herb Hand. I think this is a guy that can transform this offense. And I want to talk about this in another episode. We don't really have time now, but I saw a thing where they put out, like, basically how to judge your offensive line, and Herb Hand retweeted it there on X. And it was basically like, it was a graph, you know, of the run game. And it was like, good is to the like to the right and bad is to the left. And UCF was like, they were on their own island way over there on the right. They were by far like the best offensive line unit in college football, according to this metric that was placed on this graph. So I'm excited to see what he can do with this group. And I'm excited to see with the transfers that they brought in. They brought in a lot of veteran big guys who have been in leadership roles and played in big games. So like you said, man, it all starts here. The buck stops here. But I feel good about where they can get this line to in 2025, at least to be competent enough to get you to where you want to go. Now, the next position is technically the most important position on the field, and that is quarterback.
Right.
Somewhere where we failed miserably last year at Florida State. I mean, DJU was a failed experiment.
That's right.
I know a lot of that wasn't on him. A lot of that was when, you know, when he did have time to make a bad throw, the receivers would drop it, or, you know, he would get sacked. It was just, it was one of those things. And so you bring in a new name now with Thomas Castellanos, and it's a guy that didn't come without a little bit of, I don't know. We'll see. You know, he had one good game, and it was against a flu-ridden Florida State defense. So we'll see how this goes. So I want to see. I think he can be a dynamic guy in Gus Malzahn's offense. It's very much a system-predicated quarterback. Right. That's why you brought him here. But really what I want to see, because – and I say this because I assume Thomas Castellanos is for sure going to be your starter. So I just want to see the command of the offense that he has, right? I want to see how he gets guys lined up and him as a leader on the field. We already talked about what he did off the field. How well does he know this offense? He's played in it before. He started at UCF with Gus Malzahn, so he's familiar. You know, how well is he about getting the plays in, getting the guys lined up, knowing where to put the ball and when to do it at the right time? He doesn't have to be perfect, but I want to see a good understanding, you know, because I think the one thing is you have to take away from spring is, physical or not, this is going to be a run-heavy offense, and the quarterback right. is going to be a big part of that, but he's going right. to be in a green jersey probably because right. you want to keep him healthy. So you're not going to know how that's going to look right. until it's live fire. But I want to see, like, how good is he at making these throws? Because his arm is really the one thing that we've kind of questioned. How good, and I think it's better than people think, but how good is he at making these throws? How good is his chemistry with the wide receivers? You know, he threw with Deuce Robinson, which That's helped right. convince him to come here. So there's got to be something to that. So I want to see what he looks like from that standpoint. And then also, how has Brock Glenn progressed? Because if Thomas Castellanos is a heavy running quarterback and a small guy, there's a chance we're going to have to use the backup at some point. Is right. Brock Glenn going to be a serviceable backup for you? Is Trevor Jackson still alive? Because Lord knows he is like the quintessential fit for this offense and never gets talked about. So I want to see how that is. Of course, you have some other guys on the roster, the freshmen as well. But really, those three are the ones I'm looking at in spring. And mostly, how is Castellanos going to step up to be the leader of this offense?
Yeah, I think the big thing I'm looking at as far as the QB position is really, can Thomas Castellanos get this offense to go? Okay. Right. Can it get it to go? He is the trigger man. So if you think about this in terms of basketball, he's the point guard. He's going to get the ball where it needs to go. Can he do that? Or does he need to be, you know, depending on, does he need to be Kyrie Irving? Does he need to be Steph Curry? Does he need to be Trae Young, where he's more distributing than shooting? Whatever it is, can he figure that out as he goes along with that? Now, again, this is, like you said, this is going to be a heavy, heavy, heavy run offense. I've watched tape on how Gus Malzahn likes to run his quarterbacks, likes to leverage his quarterbacks. Thomas Castellanos is going to figure greatly into that plan. I'm with you, Jesse. I'm assuming he is going to be the starter. But can he get the ball accurately to those wide receivers and down the field passes? Because this is not going to be your dink and dunk, like your, you know, this is not going to be your 2022 Jordan Travis-esque where they were dinking and dunking and then taking a few shots. This is definitely not going to be, this is going to be more so towards your 2023 offense where they would run, and then try to hit Keon or Johnny deep down.
Right.
This is going to be more of that type of offense. And so can Thomas Castellanos make the right reads, the right checks to get him in the right play to get this offense moving? Second to last in the country in points scored per game. Like, yeah. And so can he get this offense to not, it doesn't need to be number one. It just needs to be in the top 25 of scoring yeah. points. We need to get back to that 30 point mark to see if we can, you know, make a difference there.
Yeah, no, I agree. And can he separate himself? Because, you That's know, right. so many times in spring camp last year, it's like, well, DJU won the day. Now Brock Glenn won the day.
Right.
Who's really better? And then, I have to couch everything with quarterback with I understand the pieces that were around them. I get that. That goes for Luke as well. Right. He's no longer even here. I know there was a lot on the wide receivers and the offensive line. But when we saw Brock come in, it didn't look great other That's than right. the Clemson game. They had one good game. Other than that, Duke looked terrible. And so it's like if that guy is neck and neck with your starter, we're probably in trouble. So I want to see Brock get better too.
Right.
But I want to see Thomas Castellanos be the clear and away starter. That's why you brought him here. And so moving back into the backfield at running back here, Michael, I'm not really worried about this group. There's not a whole lot of takeaways in spring that I'm watching for, to be honest. Really what I'm looking for out of this group more than anything is who's going to step up and take that RB1 spot. Now, Gus has primarily in the past used one to two guys. They don't right. really rotate like we've seen in the past at Florida State. So you're going to see, like, you want, now that Toa Philly's gone, it really is a position that's up for grabs. Like, who right. is going to be that guy? And so that's really what I'm looking for. You got Roydell Williams coming back. You got a couple of these other guys coming back. That's what I'm looking for. Who's going to step up and be that guy, that dude, that Trey Benson in that room? And then really, other than that, Michael, I just want to see Kroma. I just want to yeah. see how he looks, man. I'm yep. so excited about this kid because I think he has a chance to be running back number one right. or running back number two. So really, just who's going to step up? And I just want to see Kroma, man, because yeah. that kid is different.
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited about him. I'm excited to see because this dude's coming in with already, like, I mean, I hate to say this because they get enough whatever, but he's coming in with an SEC-type body already. Like, yeah. I mean, gosh, he looks jacked. I mean, he looked, you know, Cam Davis came in with a similar body makeup last year. So I'm really excited to see Chroma. I'm also really excited to see a second season of Cam Davis to see if he has progressed and grown from some of the setbacks he had last year, the fumbling problems, the catching problems. I'm hoping that he begins to now finally live up to what we all expected and projected for him to be. And then I think the last thing with that room is I'm curious about what they're going to do with Rodale Davis. You know, Rodale Williams. I'm curious to see what they're going to do there. Because obviously I'm assuming they paid, you know, a chunk of change to have him come, and then he's coming back. So I'm curious to see if Malzahn will stick to what, like you said, his normal two back rotation, or if they're going to try to leverage these three backs in different ways. And then the last thing is, what do they do with Mekhi Dansby? I know they're going to try to move him some to that slot receiver a little bit, I've heard, but I'm really curious to see what they try to do there.
Yeah, they said he's moving to wide receiver, but then you still got Sam Singleton too. And you have a wealth of talent. For me, it's hard to judge the running backs last year because the offensive line was so bad. Right. I mean, again, Rodale Williams, now I know most of his stats at Alabama came against that South Florida game, but I mean, he put up 500-something yards at South Florida, at Alabama.
Alabama,
Like, I don't think he's probably as terrible as we think he is.
Right.
When you consider the offensive line that he was behind last year. So it's just going to be interesting to see who steps up to be in the leadership role and then some of the new pieces that you want to see there. Now, looking at outside at the pass catchers here, this is a group I'm really excited to see. Now, I think we have a much better wide receiver room than people want to give us credit for, now, maybe on a national perspective. I think most of us know we have some good pieces in here. But I think really more than anything, Michael, I don't care who's in the room. I just want to see, can we catch the friggin' ball? That is, the buck stops there. Can we actually catch the ball? Because we had one of the highest drop rates in the country last year. When you look at percentage of targets, we were one of the worst catching receiving groups in the country. So I want to see, first off, can we catch the friggin' ball? And then number two is, how does the perimeter blocking look? Because that is such a big part of Gus Malzahn's offense. And, you know, you brought in some guys with size, so you want to see, can they use that size on the outside? So, of course, we want to hear about the newcomers with Deuce and Squirrel. We want to see how those guys do, because, again, I think those are going to be your starters there. But what about the others? Mekhi Dansby's a guy you just talked about. How is that transition going to go to receiver? That's a lot of speed there.
Right.
Is Jalen Lucas back and ready to go? That's a guy who was hurt very early in the season last year against Boston College. Is he back and ready to go? How is that kind of Squirrel White, Jalen Lucas, Mekhi Dansby in the slot, that 1-2-3 punch there, how is that looking? Are we ever going to see Hakeem Williams take off? Because, man, I'm sorry. I hate to say this. I understand there's a lot of problems. He's not had good quarterback play last year when he was really supposed to emerge. We're in bust range now.
That's right.
And so, like, you need to see it, man. It's time. You need to live up to that 5-star rating. How do they use all the size they brought in, including Hakeem? And then really the last thing for me I'm looking for out of the wide receiver group is, how are the other guys, the young guys that we saw get that burn last year when we complained about, you know, why are some of these guys, the veterans, the Portiers and that, who aren't stepping up, why are they still getting playing time? Well, they went to younger guys, and we saw flashes from an Elijah Moore, from a B.J. Gibson. Now, I don't know how involved B.J. Gibson is going to be, as he is currently playing baseball. He's going to have to be splitting duties there. I'm sure he'll probably go to practice when he can. But you still got Jaylen Brown, the LSU transfer. Right. You still got LaWayne McCoy. Where do they fit into the mix, and which one of those is going to be ready to step up to fill out the depth of that room?
Yeah. You know, Jesse, you know, we joked about this during the portal season, during the winter portal season. You know, on my college football 25, I only recruit 6'3 and taller and bigger wide receivers.
Yeah.
Because you cannot try to run a run heavy spread offense with 6 feet, 5'11, 5'8 wide receivers trying to block these huge defensive backs. That was one of the problems we saw last year. That one, you had wide receivers that weren't willing to block. Two, you didn't even have size. I mean, I literally saw a play where I think it was Jalen Lucas trying to block. It was Ja'Kai Douglas trying to block this 6'3 DB, and he just put his hands on him and stepped over him and tackled Rodale Williams in the backfield. Like, you can't have that. And so I love the fact that Malzahn and Norvell went out and got these really big, not just skinny tall, but big Johnny Wilson, Keon Coleman size wide receivers to block. So I'm really excited about that. I'm So that's number one for me, is the physicality of the blocking the wide receivers. Two, I'm with you. Can we just catch a dadgum ball? I don't care if we got to put stuff on their hands. I don't care. Can we just catch a ball? I think Georgia was maybe number one last year, if I remember correctly, of the drop ball
percentage. They were, but we had – I think they had the most dropped passes, period. That's right. But they had a ton more pass attempts than we did. From a percentage, I think we had the highest.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so like, do again, one of
that's
the
our
worst,
stat, Georgia.
That's our – thank you. Can't take that. Roof, you know? For us to have that, like, yes, man, can we just catch a dadgum ball? That would be great. And especially with an offense that's going to get the ball down the field. Those big plays are going to be huge for us to make, especially if we're going to try to beat teams like Miami and Alabama and Clemson. We're going to need to be able to catch the ball in those pivotal moments. So that's number two. And then number three, yes, I'm curious about LaWayne McCoy. I mean, this boy showed some flashes last year. We were like, oh, come on now. So he of the young receivers, I want to see more of him. What they do with him.
Yeah, I just want to see how this depth chart fills out. Because, again, you feel like you know who's going to start with the transfers coming in.
Right.
And Jordan Scott's another guy I'm watching, too.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
The 6'7 JUCO transfer. That's what I'm watching, too. And, you know, frankly, man, I'm interested here because wide receivers are a bigger part of Gus Malzahn's offense than people think. They think they don't really throw the ball. But, you know, they do throw it quite a bit. And you've got guys that need to go up and get it. And you brought in a running backs coach to coach wide receivers. So I want to see how that looks. But
it's a good point.
Yeah, so we'll see. But I'm excited about that group. That might be the one group I'm the most excited about because I think you hit some home runs in the portal. And Mike Norvell apparently does too. Now, to kind of pick up the pace a little bit here at tight end, just real quick, I think I want to see one of the things I'm watching is how they use Randy Pittman coming over from UCF. It's a guy kind of very similar to Jaheim Bell, can play H-back, can play tight end, can line up in the slot. Very kind of that Swiss Army knife type of player. I want to see how they use him. Of course, you can just go back and watch UCF because he was with them last year. Landon Thomas, he's already good. There's not much else to say there. But with more lot gone, he's going to have to step up and be the starter.
That's right.
And so is he ready to take on that starting role? Is he ready? Because he's going to have to mature quick. You know, he was a freshman last year. Now he's going to have to be a starter. Biscuit is back. What are you going to get out of him? You know, he's done some good things. He's never really been like a plus-plus player, but he can be someone for you that can bring a veteran presence to that tight end room. And then, of course, Chase Lofton. Does he look like he can contribute as a freshman? Because you lost, like, you had 16 tight ends last year, and most of them left, so you're probably going to have him play at some point. So that's one thing I'm watching for. And then the last thing out of tight ends is, how is Amari Williams splitting reps between tight end and D-line? They said he was going to work more at D-line this year, but he was an impact player for you at tight end. So I hate to lose that piece on the offense, but, you know, because you brought in 100 edge players.
That's right.
So how are they going to split up reps? So that's really all I got at tight end there.
Yeah, I think just quickly, I think with Amari Williams, I've heard that they're going to try to have him play both sides of the ball, but more sides that are more on the defensive end side. I'll be curious to see what they do there. But really, my two big things is, one, with the Swiss Army knife of Randy Pittman, man, if you could get a Jaheim-like Bell performance out of him where he's not injured, whew, what a weapon. Yep. And then number two, the bigger thing really is the blocking. Landon Thomas is good. He's going to step up and be probably that starter there. But it's really the blocking. Man, last year, the tight end struggled.
Yeah.
I mean, the offensive line's a whole struggle. But the tight end struggled with ceiling blocks, with running the right, you know, getting out to the blocks on the counter runs or all those things. They just struggle. So I'd love to see Herb Hand work with them as well as the tight end, Chris Thomas, the tight end coach, to help them get back to being a good blocking unit.
Yeah, a good blocking tight end is something that we probably haven't had since like Nick O'Leary. I mean, to be honest.
Gosh, yeah.
So looking at that, and really, I don't think there's going to be as many position group battles on the offense as there is for defense. To me, it's more filling out the depth chart slash like rotation order of who's going to be the top guys, who's going to be that next layer of guys. Right. You know, again, we already expect a lot of the transfers to come in and be the starters on the offensive line, the wide receiver room, and at quarterback here. But who's going to fill the gaps?
Right.
Who's gonna have the most chemistry? Where's the competition gonna come from? We say these guys are gonna start, but there's nothing saying these guys are already on the roster. Like, you're not taking my job. You're not coming here and doing that. So that's something I want to see too. So now we'll flip over to the defense and we'll try and pick up the pace a little bit here. You know, Michael's back, so that means we're gonna go for over an hour. That's just what we do, talking about Florida State. But hopefully you guys are enjoying this. So starting up front on the defensive line, Michael, when I was taking my notes here, actually had to kind of separate defensive tackle, because once again, this is a concern for me at defensive tackle here. Now, I will say this. If you stick with a 3-3-5 primarily, I'm not that worried about it.
Correct. Right?
Because you only need one guy.
You only need one.
But we know that they said Tony White is a very multiple guy, and he does like to run even fronts. And so if you go to an even front, all of a sudden I'm worried about defensive tackle depth. Is Daryl Jackson ready to dominate? Is he ready to be that guy? We saw in practice, now this is probably because the offensive line sucked. We saw times where they said he had to sit out because they couldn't run practice because he was so dominant in 2023 when he wasn't allowed to play. Then we saw him get to play in 2024, and before you know it, Daniel Lyons is the starter because he just wasn't giving a lot of effort and he wasn't that much of an impact player. Is he ready to be that guy? Why did you come back? Did you come back to have that NFL type of season? We need to see it. We've heard he stepped up as a leader. The guy's huge, what, 6'6", 330 or something like that? We need to see it. So the other thing with that is Daniel Lyons. I really liked what I saw from him last year. He looked really good. That's another guy that I'm looking to take that step forward. I think he's going to be your number two defensive tackle here. But, you know, we only have 65 edge defenders. Can some of them play inside? That's the thing that I want to know. Can you kick a guy inside like a Diamante Diggs from Coastal Carolina, who says he started as a defensive tackle? You know, the guy from Tennessee, Jason Jenkins, is that a guy you can play inside if you need to, like you saw we use in the past with some of the guys here? I'm drawing a blank on his name, but the guy that we used to kick inside sometimes. But when you look past your top two with Daryl Jackson and then Daniel Lyons, that's where I come to like, well, who? Because you have KJ Sampson, who's coming back. That's the only returning defensive tackle that's played over 100 snaps last year, and it was at 115, and he had a PFF grade of 55. So really, once you get past that, you have Denas White, who's a three-star coming out of high school, didn't really have any impact last year. Jamori Flagg didn't really do anything last year either. Of course, you have Kevin Wynn, who I think is probably going to have to play a lot as a freshman because that kid is good, and I think he will earn playing time on the field. But frankly, Michael, I'm worried about tackle depth if they want to use an even front and they don't have someone they feel good about kicking inside. And on top of that, like if someone were to go down, we talked about that. You know, look at 2022 when you lost Fabian Lovett and you lost that. It's not about do you have guys you can put in the rotation, right?
Correct.
It's more about guys that you can consistently count on, right? Because the talent level drops off a lot. You know, you can have, you know, another thing I'm looking for is these G5 guys. How do they progress? Sometimes it goes good, Braden Fisk. Sometimes it goes bad, Grady Kelly. What do these guys look like? So that's one of the things I'm looking for, a defensive tackle.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, just quickly, I would agree. Everything you just said there, it's really important that Daryl Jackson has an all-star year. I mean, he started coming on, we have to admit, he started coming on at the end of last season, started playing with more consistency. Tony White said at the booster event that the biggest recruit they got last year was Daryl Jackson. Yeah. That was a big-time recruit that they were able to convince to come back. So, yeah, can he have that? And then, like you said, what is the drop-off level between him, Daniel Lyons, and then the next group of people? It can't be that significant, especially, like you said, if they're going to go to an even front. So those are my biggest questions on the deep line. Honestly, you and I have been saying this. We think they need to go in this spring portal window and go get one more.
Yep. If I had a choice right now, my top position that I would take another portal player is defensive tackle.
Yep.
Again, if you're going to run 3-3-5, then you're probably okay, but you want to be multiple, and they've said that. And so I think you need a little bit more depth there, and you need Daryl Jackson to hit. You just got to have it.
Right.
At defensive end out here at the edge, again, you got 65 players to look at, so you know, you got a lot to be excited about there, but is James Williams that dude?
Right.
We heard a lot about him. We, you know, he came in highly touted, coming in. Sack is his nickname and all this type of stuff. Sack man, all that stuff. Comes in, says, you know, I'm here to dominate against Alabama and all the other good teams on the schedule. He walks the walk or talks the talk, but is he ready to walk the walk? Because at the end of the day, I know Nebraska had a really talented and deep defensive line full of NFL talent. He was still a rotational / situational piece at Nebraska, and he admitted that. There was times he'd come in and for certain packages on third down and whatnot, but he was not the starter. He only played 188 snaps at Nebraska last year. I went and looked it up. We need him to be a starter right now. And so is he ready to make that transition into being a starter? That's the one thing I'm looking at. from James Williams there. And that same conversation could be had about Jason Jenkins. This is a guy that came in with a lot of upside. Even Tennessee fans were like, man, I hated to lose this guy. Yeah. He didn't do a lot, but you saw it when he got on the field. He got buried under a talented defensive line. Tennessee had a deep defensive line last year, but this was a guy who comes in with a lot of hype. He played 214 snaps last year. That's another guy you're probably going to need to start in game one against Alabama. So is he ready to step into that starting role? Then, as we talked about with the tackles, the G5 guys, Deontay McCray, very highly touted run stopper from Western Kentucky, and Diamante Diggs. Are we getting Braden Fisk? Are we getting Grady Kelly? We need to know. And then really the rest of that room, you have some veterans, Jaden Jones, Aaron Hester. They're both upperclassmen who have never really done anything. Are they going to be guys that can contribute? You got Tylan Coleman coming over from JUCO. And then there's, of course, the crop of young guys that I don't expect to get a lot from this year. But, I mean, Tylon Lee, that's a guy who was a huge steal, a very talented edge rusher. Is he going to be able to get on the field? You got the Desir twins. Will anybody be able to have a breakout freshman season in 2025? That's really what I'm looking for from my edge rushers, man. I need James Williams and I need the guy, Jason Jenkins from Tennessee to make me feel confident that they're going to be my starters against Alabama.
Yeah. Listen, I think James, I need him. The one thing I will say, I need him to have I'm going to pull from the past, a Bjorn Warner like season.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
I need this dude to just dominate on the end, man. Florida State football is synonymous with having DNs who are living in the backfield, who are causing havoc. I mean, you talk about Jermaine Johnson. You talk about Jared Verse. I mean, you talk about when Pat Payton was something, you know, before he was, you know, off to LSU to go lose to Florida State more times whenever we play him. But we need to get back to that dominant. And I'm hoping James Williams is that type of player. Yes, maybe he got buried under a talented DN room there at Nebraska. And so he was only 180 snaps. Maybe coming here and coming into a new place, he grows into that position and he can be more dominant. We really need that, man, because if not, it doesn't matter how great the D tackles are if the edges can't get around or get through to get to the quarterback to cause havoc. So that's really what I'm looking for is, can he be the guy that the hype that was built up about him will align him to be?
Yeah, for sure. And then moving back to linebacker here, to me, this is one of the most interesting positions to watch on defense. It is, man, because like I feel really good and also a little nervous about this position group. Like I think really to start with, you have incoming veterans and some guys that showed potential at FSU last year. So it's not one where like you're wholeheartedly going with the transfers. And it's also not one where you're wholeheartedly going with the returning players either. Right. Now, with that said, I do think Elijah Herring can be the anchor of the middle of your defense. He was great at Memphis, played over 700 snaps there, was also a leader, led Tennessee in tackles the year before when he was there before he transferred out. I mean, he's not the best in coverage, but I think he's the best linebacker overall that you got right now to anchor that middle linebacker spot. So I think that's a guy who can be your, as they call it, the green dot guy, who can be your signal caller in the middle of that defense and a steady force there. Now, the one that I'm probably the most intrigued by is Stephon Thompson. This is the one I'm watching in spring. And the reason I say that is because he went from a starter, a good starter at Syracuse, to a backup rotational player at Nebraska as a fifth-year senior. Why? That's what I want to know. Why? His PFF grades were still pretty good in the limited little bit, you know, of playing time that he got there. Was it an injury thing? I mean, obviously, Tony White felt good enough to bring him to Florida State that he needed him. He's a veteran guy. So is he going to be the guy that you need him to be, or is he going to get passed up by someone else? Then, of course, you have the returning guys that you got to talk about. Omar Graham Jr., who you talked out of the portal, was, you know, we were ready to throw him in the portal at the beginning of the season. And then we were happy to get him out at the end of the season because, man, he became one of your best linebackers. So you got him. You got Blake Nicholson, who's poised to start now coming into, year three or four here. He looked good. You got Drew Cryer, had some flashes before he got hurt. Caleb LaValle, I think is how you say it, coming in from UNC, is still young, but looked great in UNC's bowl game. Maybe one of your better coverage linebackers. You got Jane Parrish is in year two now. So, man, I feel like the linebacker room is probably in the best place it's been in a long time, but I'm still a little bit nervous to see how it shakes out because, again, the whole Stephon Thompson situation, which Omar Graham Jr. do you get? Is Blake Nicholson ready to take that extra step? I just need to see it shake out, man. But I feel like there's a lot of potential in this room.
Yeah, I think, Jesse, for me, like, this is the one position of all of the Florida State team that, for me, has still the most questions, but also the most, like, cautious excitement about. I mean, because let's be real. When is the last time outside of 2023, and let's be real, you know, Tatum Bethune Kalen DeLoach, they weren't world beater linebackers. They weren't the linebackers you see at Georgia or Alabama, but they were serviceable. They were in a position that they could be in, right? And they made some plays. I mean, I think about Tatum Bethune playing hurt and getting that interception in the ACC championship.
Basically won us the game.
Won us the game, right? So you're just not sure, like, okay, what are you actually getting? Is Omar Graham better? Is Nichols better? Like, are the players that you brought in, are they going to actually step up to the plate? But also, oh my gosh, these are on paper better players we've had in a long time at this position. Yeah. Then you factor in the fact that John Papusha is now the linebacker coach, right? Who's coached linebackers before. What can he do? You saw what he does with the special teams.
Yeah.
When he had decent DNs, you saw what he did with the DNs as well, too. So can he also do that? So this, for me, is the position that has the most questions, but also a lot of cautious excitement around.
Yeah, I think if you can, like you said, man, if you can just get what you got out of 2023, where, like, maybe you don't have, you know, first-round NFL draft pick linebackers, but you just have daggone good, solid college linebacker play, man, that would do worlds for your defense, especially in a 3-3-5. So,
and I'll say this. If one of them puts a neck roll on, I'm all about it.
I need a neck roll and some taped-up fingers, man. Let's go. That's what I really want to see, you know. And, hey, we got a couple white linebackers now,
let's
too.
Let's go!
So, you know what I mean? So, hey, we're going to get a Butkus Award soon here. I feel it coming. But let's talk about the secondary here, because I think this is a very interesting conversation when you talk about the secondary. And the reason I say that is because you have to replace three starters at the cornerback position and one at the safety position, and you didn't bring anybody in. You chose to roll with what you got, so that means you must like what you already have here. Right. Now, Quindarius Jones, Edwin Joseph, and Jabril Rawls played the most at corner last year. I think those guys are going to be poised to be your starters this year, especially when you talk about Jones and Joseph. I think those guys looked really good as young guys. I think now that they can step into those starter roles, you know, we'll have to see. Of course, you may have to live with some growing pains as young guys, but I think they showed that they can really be consistent players for you last year, and it was really good to get that experience even in the down season. But they also like Kai Bates. They like Ricky Knight. And you also have Charles Lester there. Now, of course, I'm not trying to put somebody's business out there. You do have the off-the-field trouble situation with Charles Lester. That's to be determined. Obviously, he's still on the roster and going through practice, so he's going to be around. We just don't know if there's any punishment or anything like that. I just want to say that. But you have a handful of young guys that you like. Who's going to emerge at the starter? And we'll start with cornerback, and then we'll move to safety because that's a little bit of a different conversation. But you got to replace all the starters.
That's right.
You didn't bring anybody in, so I think you like what you got in Jones and Joseph, and then Rawls is kind of your guy number three there. But they got a bunch of, you know, we have done nothing but bring in talented DBs. It's time to see them be put on the field in the situation and thrive.
Yeah, absolutely. I like what Jones is doing there. He showed a lot of flash last season, so I think he could definitely be one that really competes for a starting opportunity there. And then I'm curious to see what they get in Kai Bates. You know, there's been a lot of talk around him, a lot of I won't say hype, but just excitement. I think
Mike Norvell loves him.
He talked about him at the booster event about what Bates is doing so far in the tour of duty. So I'm curious to see what they do there, but I think you've trusted the evaluation and the recruitment that Patrick Surtain has done around this secondary. And I know we'll get to the safeties in just a moment, but I can understand why they didn't bring anyone in from the portal because they are really excited about the talent. I do think you're going to have to take some of those growing pains, but honestly, if you play the type of multiple defense that Tony Weiss likes to play, some of that talent or some of that experience discrepancy can get covered up in how you scheme it up. So it'll be interesting to see there. But yeah, I'm really excited about definitely Jones and definitely to see what Mike Norvell sees in Kai Bates.
Yeah, and because, again, you've brought in a lot of talent, and, you know, we've kind of talked about, like, we're waiting to see some of the things from Patrick Surtain's recruits, too.
Right.
I mean, a lot of the guys he inherited, and he did a good job with them, so now it's time to see it. I think the one favorite thing of mine about Edwin Joseph and Quindarius Jones, they're just some dogs, man.
That's right.
I mean, you know, they're coming in there as freshmen and just, like, they're letting you know about it. You know, they've got the celebrations and all that stuff.
So they hit you. They hit you.
They are physical. And so those are two guys I'm really excited about. I think I am not worried about them so much. Yeah, they might give up some stuff, but I think they're going to be really good. Now, talking about safety, this might be one of the most unsure position groups of the defense for me. Of course, you have to start with Shaheem Brown is back as a redshirt senior. I mean, he has looked the part in the past. We were really excited about him coming into last year. And frankly, he had a terrible season.
He did.
He looked scared to be physical a lot. Kind of, I don't know, less than 100% effort. Slow to fill run gaps. Didn't really want to stick his nose in there and be physical. Is he ready to get back to the old Shaheem that we know he can be? Or is he, I don't know, going to get passed up? That's the one thing. And this is the one position I've seen a lot of people say, do you need to go after another safety in the portal? This is one of the ones that you're looking at. And I mean, KJ Kirkland, I think, is the other name here who's probably going to be penciled in as one of your starters. Played 434 snaps last year as a redshirt freshman. So a ton of experience now coming into his second full year here. So I think those are two guys that you like. You still have Conrad Hussey last year. Now, listen, Conrad, we got to have a talk here, my friend. You were one of my breakout players ahead of last season, and I was ready to throw your butt in the portal by season's end. You had me hot under the collar, my friend. I was not happy about that. So I want to see him get back to making those crazy interceptions that he did, like I think it was Virginia Tech where he did, and coming up and laying dudes out. Like, that's the one that I'm looking at there, because the potential's there. But what we saw last year is not good enough. No. And then the last one, obviously here, you know, one of the names to watch is Earl Little Jr.
Yeah.
You know, he made the transition from that nickel position back to safety, kind of really struggled there on the outside, but then at safety, hopefully that turns into a better move than him. He was probably the most physical of the bunch. I mean, that's he will come up and hit you in the mouth. So I think that's another guy that can be certainly in the mix there. Of course, you have Ashlyn Barker that played 135 snaps last year. I think you got some pieces, but what are you going to be able to get out of them? I like Shaheem, old Shaheem. I like KJ Kirkland. I like Earl Little Jr. and Barker here. But can you put it together on the field? Because last year, it just didn't look that great, man.
Yeah, I think the two quickly focus that I'm looking at is, does old Shaheem come back? Like you said, I mean, you go back and watch that Boston College game, Mike. Just even thinking about it just makes me mad right now. Just how, like you said, wasn't willing to stick himself into the run game, missing gaps like crazy, getting blocked out of the play, all the way out of the play, and just allowing some guy to completely take him out of the run fit there. Yeah. I mean, just ridiculous. Whether it was injury, whether it was, you know, Mike Norvell talked about that maybe some of that had to do with the snub and, you know, some, you know, his posture played off into the posture of the returning players, all that. That's great. I forgive you. Can you get back to that? Because what's on tape right now for your NFL draft prospect is what we saw last season, Shaheem.
Yeah.
And if you can get back to the Shaheem of 2023 that was downhill in people's face, hitting your grandma and your cousin's uncle, like that's the one we want to see. And then number two for me is Earl Little Jr. I mean, when he finally got it, when it all clicked for him, that boy played with reckless abandon.
Yep.
That's what we need on the other side of that. So for me, those are the two things I'm looking for. I think the other players you mentioned also have great possibilities there, but I need to see those two players really step up. They paid a significant chunk of change to get Earl Little Jr. It's time to cash in.
Yeah, 1,000%, man. You just want to see guys who are full go all the time. And you've seen it. And like you said, man, it's Shaheem. It's your money year, man. You got to make this one count. And you can use the excuse for last year, but man, it's a new year. It's time to bury that and move on and get back to it. So the last thing real quick, Michael, I don't think we can go through spring without mentioning this. You have to replace, this might be the most important part. You have to replace two of the best specialists in the entire country who were the two best players on your entire team last year. So I just want to see, like, who's going to step up as the kicker and the punter? What do these guys look like? You know, I think you have a couple of different options there to go to. So what do they look like? I don't expect them to be Fitzgerald and Mastromano, but can they be serviceable? Can we not have kicking problems? That's, I think, what you're most worried about there. And then who's going to return kicks? Makai Danzy is a guy who, obviously, we saw electric kickoff return touchdown against Duke last year. Squirrel White said, you know, hey, if they want me to return kicks, I'm going to return kicks. And he was a guy who was really good at returning kicks. So those are a couple of things that I'm watching for on special teams. But to round out the episode here, because I know we're running along again, like I said, I got Michael back in the fold. So, you know, we got some catching up to do, got some talking to do. I'm just excited to see spring kickoff, man, because I'm just so ready to turn the page on last year. That's right. And I do think Florida State, you know, talk about that win total. I think you're going to get back to winning ways, right? I don't know that it's going to be a playoff year or anything like that, but I think it's going to look a lot better this year with the new staff and the new pieces that you brought in. And this is going to be our first chance to really kind of bury 2024 and move on to 2025. Right. So I'm really excited for spring to get underway.
Yeah, me too. I am curious just to see what this team attitude, physicality, leadership, you know, just all the things we've talked about. Like, that's what I want to see. And again, we've said this, I've said this, I will keep saying this. I will not get more cautiously excited. I will not until I see what the product is against Alabama.
Yeah.
But what I will do is I will become more encouraged by the product based on some of the things that come out this spring. If we're continuing to hear about the physicality, if we're continuing to hear about the leadership standpoint, if we're continuing to hear that, you know, James Williams stepping up at DN, that Earl Little is showing more signs of progress, that the old Shaheem is back, that Daryl Jackson is dominating, that the offensive line is gelling, that, man, Thomas and the receivers seem to be on the same page in the offense. Those things will encourage me, and it will encourage you, Noel Nation, so that you have faith in this team on that first game of the season.
Yeah, and I think you touched on the one thing, really the mentality is the one thing I'm looking for, because if we're pissed off about last year, they should be more embarrassed and pissed off than we are tenfold. Right. And so I want to see them come out and be like, look, we're not talking this year, we're working.
Right.
And that's all we're concerned about, because that 2-10 season will not define us going into 2025. So the last thing we got for you guys here today is a little bit of baseball talk, because, you know, we're big baseball fans here. I love this team. You know, Mike, I think I have maybe after last year with them going out to Omaha and our football team kind of sucked last year. Baseball is really growing on me. It's the only thing we got to attach ourselves to, which, I mean, shout out to softball as well. I mean, I don't know how many programs in the country are top 10 in baseball and softball. Also, shout out to the women's basketball.
Come on, man. You saw that big win?
Upset number 3 Notre Dame. Woo. Put some respect on that program. But a little bit of baseball talk here. Remains undefeated at 8-0, number 7 in the country after a hard-fought win over there at Jacksonville. You know, Jacksonville is always a team that can be that kind of giant killer, but, you know, they faced some adversity. They came out on top, which is good to see, because they don't face really any good teams in the early part of the season. So you want to see them be able to kind of get that gritty win there. Really, the one thing that stood out in that game was Chris Neer. I hope I'm saying his name right. I asked Jeff about this like 3 times. I'm like, what do you say? Because I want to make sure we're saying the same thing. Chris Neer was clutch as a closer. And, man, he looked like – I think Link has found his closer. I think this is a guy that you can count on coming in to really get that last inning and a half for you there. But, you know, when me and Jeff were talking about baseball yesterday, our baseball analyst, Jeff, we were talking about it yesterday on the phone. I think Florida State still needs to find a reliable middle reliever. That's the one thing you're kind of looking at. We've seen some struggles and some good things from Ben Barrett. So, you know, got Hudson Rowan, which he got hurt a little bit there. Joe Charles is a guy that I'm kind of waiting to see a little bit more from. They haven't used him, but I think one time this season. So really kind of finding that middle reliever is the next thing you have here. Lord knows we were talking about, man, if you could get Cam Leiter back in any capacity throughout the season and he was your middle reliever, you're not touching this pitching staff.
Yeah.
I do think the offense has been better than expected. The one thing I'd like to see them get better at is they do strand too many runners on bases. This happens a lot, and it is frustrating. But I think a lot of that is just finding the consistency from the top to the bottom. You have that top half of that lineup. Look, man, I think Gage Harrelson might be like your – if you had to have like a Jared Verse of the baseball team from a transfer aspect, Gage Harrelson is legit. I love watching him play. He has been a great addition to this team on offense and on defense as well. So, you know, and look, Alex Lodoy's has really stepped up this year. You got Drew Ferreau, who's really just, I mean, crushing the ball. Max Williams did take one off the wrist. I don't think he's probably going to play this weekend, but Link said it was nothing serious. Those guys have been good. You need the bottom half of that lineup to not strand the guys. So that's something that's big there as well. Now, up next for Florida State is a series this weekend, kicking off tonight on Friday, depending on when you're watching this, at 5 p.m. or should I say opening up. It's not football. It's not kicking off at 5 p.m. against Georgetown. Now, again, this is another one that you should get the sweep here. Georgetown is not great. They lost both opening series, one against Presbyterian and one against Sacred Heart. They're coming into Tallahassee on a 3-game losing streak here. Their offense struggles mightily so far this season, and this is by far going to be the best pitching staff that they faced all season. baseball is a tricky sport, man. I mean, we saw number one Texas A&M go down to Texas State. You've seen Duke suffer some insane losses this year.
Yeah.
So it's not easy to stay undefeated because all it takes is one hot pitcher.
That's right.
In a game. But this is another one that you should get the sweep in. You should get the series win, then you should get the sweep, and you should move to keeping that undefeated record. But hey, look, man, so far, my overall thoughts, Florida State looks good again. It's still really early. Haven't really played anyone good. I think their first real test is going to be that Florida game in the midweek coming up in March here. But, you know, it's like I was talking about with Jeff. Those midweeks are really kind of a tough cookie because it's like that's like judging your team while facing two backup quarterbacks.
That's right.
Like
that's
you're
right.
not facing the starting pitching. But that's really going to be your first test until you go to Notre Dame for your first kind of real tough weekend series here. And then you got Miami, you got UNC, you got UVA. You got a lot of tough series coming up. But, man, they look good so far. I think the offense has been better than I expected. And I think your starting weekend rotation is lights out. You got a good closure. You're just looking for some of that middle relief. But, man, if they can go in and look good against Georgetown again this weekend, you know, hey, I mean, keep rolling. This is a really good program right now.
Yeah, I've been excited about, you know, catching the baseball and Link and the boys there. I think they've been doing, to start the season out 8-0. I caught the last of the Penn game. I watched that game. And Wes Mendez, man, that transfer from Ole Miss. My goodness. Whew, man, he's got an arm. He's got command. And I really enjoyed the way he threw that game there. And then, of course, you know, they, like you said, I do agree. I think the middle relieving is still an area of concern. Help me out here, Jesse. Why is Cam Leiter? Is he injured? Is that why he hasn't been playing?
Man, this is a whole situation. So he got injured early on last year. We thought he was going to be back.
I remember that. Yeah.
Link said in the preseason that's not even a conversation they're having right now. It's one of the strangest injury situations I've ever seen. Supposedly, we're hoping we can get him back. You don't need him for the first part of the season. Be nice if he made it back for ACC play, but man, I don't think anybody really knows what's going on with Cam Leiter.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, I was wondering about that too as well. I think right now the team feels great. I think they won't get tested. I mean, obviously, like you said, you can get a dominant pitcher one day, you can get hot bats one day, and you know, they end up losing the game. But really, I think that test is going to really come when they go to Miami and they go to play down in Gore Gables or Morro Gables, as we like to call there. And then, of course, the midweek games you're always playing, you know, you're going against pitching that's way down the depth chart there in the midweek, but it still gives you a little bit of barometer what you can see. Florida's been pretty decent this year. I think if I remember correctly, Florida State won the midweek series against Florida last year. I think they
swept them. Yep.
They swept them. Yeah, in those games. So if you could do that again, I mean, that shows you know more signs of life there. But yeah, I'm really excited about them. I'm keep watching. So I hope you'll keep watching too, Noah Nation.
Yeah, definitely. I wish they would. Me and Jeff were talking about this the other day. I really wish they would move that Florida series back to a weekend series.
Yeah, so you could be good.
Yeah, so you could see best on best. But that Miami series is going to be huge. I mean, they look good this year.
They look good.
That's going to be a good one. You got some tough ones coming up, so we'll see. But that's what this early part of the season is for, to kind of feel out your lineups, find the guys that you can rely on. So, yeah, let's see how they look again against Georgetown this weekend. But, man, excited to see baseball get back underway tonight, Friday night, under the lights at Hauser. So we appreciate you guys watching. That's going to be it for today's show. Again, like we said, glad to have Michael back. You know, I've been trying to shorten them up a little bit when it's just myself, so you guys don't have to hear me ramble too long. But, you know, anytime you get me and Michael talking Florida State, it's going to be an hour plus. We always joke we're going to go less than an hour. It never happens. Hopefully you guys enjoyed this episode. Glad to be back with you guys for another one. And make sure you like and subscribe. We are still pushing to 2,000 subscribers. We are less than 100 away, so we appreciate you guys doing that. Rate and review on the podcast helps us reach other Noles fans. Also, make sure you check out the website, plantthespear.com. We've been doing baseball previews, baseball recaps. I'm getting ready to write a couple of football articles there as well, so make sure you guys go check that out too. Thank you for watching, and we will catch you on the next one. As always,
go Noles.